The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is David Jensen, Director of Engineering for E-commerce at Photobox. Mate, well, like we were saying, it seems like we've had our coffees. We're ready to go here. Always a pleasure doing these in the morning. I quite actually enjoy doing them in the morning. I know I like to kind of moan, but I think that's just the northern in me that kind of appreciates a good moan in the morning. But it's actually a really good way to kind of get the day set up. You know, having these kind of verbal back and forth. I don't know what it is, but I tend to think better afterwards. You know, like, I don't know if you have those kind of meetings as well, or where you're kind of just grab a few people on your team and you're trying to spar out an idea. But it tends to, like, when you kind of stood up, you know, you're verbalizing your thoughts, sometimes you can work out your own problems with the idea just by speaking about them. I don't know why that is, but for me, it certainly feels as though, you know, it's like clarity on thoughts and, you know, but I can sort of solve a lot of the problems. Whereas if I'm just kind of in my own shell with the headphones in, the ideas sometimes sound good. And then I verbalize it and it's like, actually, that was a terrible idea. What was I ever thinking about?
Yeah, I think it's basically because you use a different part of your brain. Like, so you engage with a different part of your brain to speak. And it's the same with when you draw, you know, so standing, like we do the same, but stand up in front of a whiteboard and you can combine the standing, the talking and the drawing to externalize what's in your brain and make sure at least everybody's looking at exactly the same mental model. Yeah. That gives you a benefit. And the drawing and the talking engage different parts of your brain. So you're just getting more horsepower behind it, mate.
Yeah, I like it though. It's such a good thing. Like I the first business I ever worked with was a startup, e-commerce startup out in California, and like he was such a big advocate of that, and I just thought he was a bit mental at the time. I don't even know if you're even allowed to say that anymore, but I'm going to say it because who cares, right? But because he was just kind of very stood up, he actually had an old school kind of countdown timer that he'd put on the table. You know, and you'd give you like 10 minutes to spar out an idea and you'd have to stand up and kind of verbalize it. And I just found that really, really interesting. And at the time, you know, I think like anything, you kind of rebel. you know, I don't know why, like, you know, when you're young, you just kind of rebel to ideas that seem a bit different. And then it wasn't until I went to my next place that I was like, actually, there's a lot of like substance to that, what he was doing. And since then, like, I've actually become like a big, I don't have the old school countdown timer, needless to say, but certainly enjoy like grabbing my team, bringing them in the office and just stand up sparring. It's just a much more engaging way of doing things. Like everyone these days as well. I mean, the beauty of tech is, you know, is a given with what we are able to do with it these days. But at the same time, we still have to treat ourselves as humans, you know, and work to our actual strengths. And I think sometimes with the way we communicate, you know, it can be very much like, you know, technology based. And I think that sometimes we kind of miss a trick by relying on that, you know, using Slack and email all the time and things. And I just think sometimes it's like, you know, I'm down the other side of the office, just come and talk to me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's one of the core parts of the Agile Manifesto, and a lot of the developers, you know, start the day with a daily stand-up, you know, with everybody kind of having a verbal conversation, standing up, looking each other in the eye.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to ask a little bit, you know, your kind of shift, speaking on that, you know, your shift from going, you know, hands-on coding to kind of shifting to really more of a non-coding line of work and more in the kind of managerial and leadership side. Obviously things like that, you know, like you mentioned in the Agile Manifesto, there are those kind of guides that you can follow and you know, kind of interpret into your own kind of system that you want to build. But either way, even though there is a lot of help out there, it's still quite an intimidating thing I found, and it's still such a shift of career, let's just call it that. You know, it is a completely different career path. You know, what was that kind of experience like for you, you know, with actually trying to find what you know, what was your style? Because that's what you're kind of trying to build, isn't it, I suppose, is develop your own kind of style on things.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a massive shift for me. And if I give you a little bit of context, it was sort of for the first startup that I worked for had just come to an end, like really badly, as in like not being paid for sort of 6 weeks, having to sign on. So I was in a pretty interesting place personally, having kind of gone quite early in, went from a developer to a lead developer to a dev manager within about 6 months, went from managing no one to 20 people in about a year. And then having had all of that kind of crumble around me, but being very much the technical driving force. And when that all left, I had quite a big decision about where I was going to go next. And I went out to the market, and I was looking around at the kind of different options that I had. And I guess it's, you know, kind of, you've got to kind of figure out what you want. And I figured out one of the things for me was I was never going to be like, you know, the super kind of third level kind of architect sort of guy. And I knew that, you know, and I'm pretty good with, you know, kind of, I'm pretty good with engineering and coding, but I think my kind of specialty was sort of understanding how that translates into kind of, you know, and communicating that on a, you know, on a wider sense. So, I mean, I decided to take the jump, and I picked up a head of development role, but I went from coding in .NET and SQL, and I've, you know, kind of been through that through university. That's the stack I learned, and I'd worked with that for about 7 years, and I jumped into sort of Java, the open source world, custom built kind of, you know, legacy complex software. So it wasn't just jumping, you know, jumping from a kind of known technology stack to another known technology stack. That sort of forced me to kind of have to reevaluate, and it took me probably 6 months, I think, to feel comfortable again after I'd made that decision to kind of go across. And I really had to go back into myself and understand, okay, although I, you know, this is what I want, this is a decision that I've made, how can I make, what is my role now within that, and how can I enable others to be technical? And I basically had to broaden my horizons a lot. So in that kind of time, I started reading a lot, and I went pretty deep on agile, product management, UX, analytics, project management, and then kind of finally strategy of kind of pulling all of that together. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the beginning of the spark, was the interest in learning on, you know, I like solving complex problems, and actually there's a lot of complexity in what you're going to do next. You know, there's a lot of complexity in how you approach structuring mm-hmm. people and teams. You know, there's a lot of complexity in how do you turn the kind of desire for kind of growth and business outcomes into kind of actual kind of realization of what you're going to do next in a, you know, in a piece by piece way. So I kind of reframed what I like to do from solving technical problems really deeply mm. to solving problems, you know, complex problems really deeply. And that was a kind of beginning of me kind of understanding that, you know, there's different types of problems that can be solved. And that learning bug kind of kicked in, like I had earlier when I was, you know, kind of learning to go deep in kind of, you know, C# at the time that was, or kind of going really deep in SQL and learning new languages. Each of those disciplines had a chunk of learning and understanding and application that I could kind of get my teeth into a little bit. And that reframing that I did of kind of those problems that kicked into kind of then, hey, look, there's some really new interesting things to learn. And then being able to apply that with my engineering background kind of, I think, brought me through the other side of it. But, you know, even though after 6 months, I felt a little bit more comfortable, but it was probably another 12 months in that role before I really had, you know, I felt successful, you know, which is, you know, 18 months is quite a long time. And I think I've always had a personal goal of kind of being a CTO and being at the top. And that was one of the things I think helped me stay strong, you know, through that period. Because I'm like, look, this feels like it's a good step on that journey, even if the journey's not a direct kind of linear line.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting what you're saying as well. It's almost like, you know, when you kind of stepped into that position, the problem solving element was an interesting one, because you know, you kind of don't, you know, I think within the constraints of what your job role is, it's not that I wouldn't call it necessarily like pigeonholing, but it's almost like you can solve like there's so many more problems to solve, and it's non-restrictive. Yep. And I think that's what keeps it compelling. And, you know, from my experiences, that's why I worked in startups for so long. Yeah. Was because you got to wear so many different hats. You know, like you called yourself a job title, but like you got involved in so many different things. And I think when you kind of step out of that, you know, structured job role, you know, you get your teeth stuck into the business so much more. And what's interesting, and it'd be interesting to get your take, is when you kind of move into that position, almost the business becomes a bit more important, if you know what I mean, to you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, before it's like you could be working anywhere if you're kind of solving like the same problems over and over again. It's kind of irrelevant. But then things like culture, the business, the way it's structured, you know, the way they treat employees, all these kind of things, the mission that they're on, those type of things seem to become like that much more important. I don't know whether you kind of got that sense when, you know, when you were progressed into those kind of positions.
Yeah, no, very much so, because you sort of, you know, you kind of look like a horse with the blinkers on, you know, with the last role fully focused on the kind of engineering and technology side. And as you take those blinkers off and look wider, you naturally end up having to kind of, you know, go around and understand what the why behind things. And a lot of that why, you're right, comes to the top. You know, what's the mission and the vision? I was quite fortunate at the time to kind of get some sort of management training and some quite good support through that transition, which, you know, kind of helped me. And I read some kind of good books and got quite into the whole how Silicon Valley kind of structure, you know, their companies. And it was also it was metro.co.uk that was the newspaper, the kind of, you know, the digital arm of that I was running. And it was small enough to kind of wrap your arms around. Mm. And because the newspaper was kind of, you know, they made 98% of the profit and we were only the 2% on the side, I was given quite a wide license to do something different there. And because, again, we were part of a larger group that had done, you know, that was pretty staid, you know, Daily Mail, and they kind of had their own big technology platforms. They let us kind of take a bit more of a punt on, you know, our approach, you know, kind of, and the way that we took it. But again, if you want to motivate people, it's the why that is, you know, the most important thing. And that why has to be rooted not just in technology, but, you know, the reason for the whole business's existence.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's true. The, you know, interestingly enough, you know, before you were in a managerial position and such, it's just a quick one. My take was that I don't think I ever really gave the managers the credit, I suppose, because I was just I always look at them and like, well, we're the ones doing all the work. You know, yeah. I was one of those people, you know, probably, I'm ashamed to say. And, you know, it's interesting because then you get into that position and it's a whole, you know, different set of skills and whatever. But I certainly didn't have the appreciation until I was actually in the position. And, you know, maybe that says a lot about me. But I think a lot of people probably feel the same way. But maybe that's all due to experience, whether you had good managers or whatever the case may be. And, you know, I think it highlights the need for good managers and what good actually looks like, because that kind of reward system, when you go into management and stuff, is completely different, right? Because when you're banging out code, that reward system is almost gratifying. You get it more consistently. You know, you bang out a good line of code, feels really good. But then when you're in management, you sometimes feel a bit confused because you're not sure what you're supposed to feel good about. You know, if you know where I'm coming from, there's kind of that reward system is very much
very
different.
Very much so. And the higher you get, the further away you get from, you know, kind of daily interactions with teams, the worse that becomes. I mean, it's something I've, you know, personally, you know, been working on a lot over the last kind of 12 to 18 months as my kind of shifted from kind of managing, you know, managing people that are in teams to managing people that manage teams to managing people who manage the teams. And that, as you get further away, the gratification becomes longer. You know, I think that's one of the things that I refrain, that, you know, you're right, once you're in the zone and you're doing some deep problem solving, either whether that's, you know, at a code level or, as you kind of described earlier, standing around a whiteboard with your team, that gratification is pretty instant, right? You're kind of like, right, we've solved that. That feels really good. You get a buzz. But when you're working with people, and what I had to reframe is, my success is no longer the success of myself, but my success is the success of the people that work, you know, for me, or, you know, are kind of around me. And that was probably the key reframe that I did there. So I'm not looking internally for my success. I'm looking externally by default to see how they're doing, how they're operating, the value they're driving. And that was, you know, that was a key reframe that I've done in the last, you know, sort of, you know, 12 to 18 months across that. The other things that I've kind of, you know, looked at is, I used to be very kind of task focused, and trying to get a lot of kind of stuff done, but I can't do that so much anymore. So rather than having a massive task list, I've just gone to having a clear weekly goal that I want to achieve. So rather than having lots of different things that I need to do, it's like, what's the one thing I need to 100% nail this week, and focus on that. And then at the end of the week, then do some reflection around that goal. How did that make me feel? Could it, you know, has that made me feel good or not? And that kind of, that constant reflection at a kind of weekly basis of, you know, at least setting something to do so I feel like I can achieve that in the grand scheme of things. Plus then that reflection point of, you know, a couple of paragraphs around how that made me feel, and has enabled me to kind of have a better internal narrative with myself around improvement and continue that refrain.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's you need a great sense of self-awareness to be able to do that, though.
You force it, right? And that's the writing has been something that I've used, you know, personally a lot to do that. Because I find by writing something down, like the first draft of it is a bit rubbish, but then you edit it, and by editing it, because they're your thoughts on a, you know, on your screen, you can kind of edit your thoughts. So kind of externalizing them puts it in a place where you can look at it externally, and then you can edit it, right? And those are kind of your thoughts. So you kind of edit your thoughts externally, and then you can reread it over and over again. And you get to a point where that then becomes the kind of the reframe or reality. So again, that's kind of one of the hacks that I've used personally, is to write things down around that, to then edit them and then read them back. And that helped me kind of, you know, retrain my brain a bit and go, you know, but to have a practical process or approach to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that something you've kind of always done then? Or is that something you kind of...
No, I mean, it's something I started when I was at Metro blogging, because we were building a blogging platform at the time, and like, that's what everyone was doing and we were new. So I kind of started it with that to kind of get to the end of, you know, reasonably large kind of things that we were working on, or when I'd solved a problem. And by writing it down, again, that's when I kind of learned that the editing process, because I'm a little bit OCD when it comes to, you know, publishing something on the internet. So I'd spend like a month thinking about the same thing and polishing it and going out. And then I'd put it, you know, publish it and, you know, publicly, and get some feedback on it. And it was sort of through that process there, which kind of happened by default, you know, kind of because of the environment I was in that triggered that. And it's something that I've kind of held on to ever since.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, I like it. I mean, I feel as though, you know, I've done some kind of writing myself, and I really enjoy the process, and I like the discipline element of it. Yeah. I like the podcasting as well, because it forces me to do these shows, you know, consistently. And I that's a similar discipline in itself. Granted, probably a more sustainable one than writing, because I'm probably not the best writer in the world. I enjoy my writing, so that's good enough. But you know, it's the discipline element and getting into good habits is all part of it. I talk about this with the, you know, the founder and Venturi quite a bit. You know, we kind of spar back and forth on, you know, how to best kind of tackle the day to get us in that kind of mindset. And for me, it all kind of boils down to discipline, and there's no like one way of doing things. But I think it's creating good habits and also having kind of things that you're doing outside of your kind of core responsibilities at work. I say that to my team all the time. I can't stress the importance of that, you know, being able to funnel energy into something else outside of work, because otherwise you don't have perspective. You know, the importance of doing things like this podcast, for instance, is that, you know, you get to interact with different people, you know, I'm very lucky that like I have this platform really, because I get so many different people's opinions, so many different perspectives, and it kind of keeps my head outside of the bubbles to some extent. And you know, forcing yourself into those situations is so, so important. You know, LinkedIn's fantastic for that. You know, if you want to connect with someone completely random, just because, you know, from a completely different industry doing a completely different job, you know, but maybe see similar seniority, you can do that. You can find that. You can connect with people. You just have to kind of go to meetups, whatever the case may be. I think it's so, so, so important from people at all levels to be able to do that, because as you know, as I know, it's so easy to be consumed by the bubble that you're in. No matter how innovative the organization might be, a lot of the organizations that are innovative are only innovative because they keep their head above water as much as possible, and they do, you know, as much external kind of liaising as they can. So it's, everyone I talk to, I think I can't stress the importance of that and being, and it all boils down to discipline. And I think if you have those habits that you can funnel that energy into outside of work, I think it creates those good habits when you're in work as well.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, like for me, I run twice a week, every week, you know, 6K, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, 300, you know, all through the year. And that's one of my kind of core habits of just making sure I, you know, get stuff done, you know, kind of, that translates into, as I say, my weekly goals. It's the one thing I make sure every week I write down a goal, and then I spend, you know, I do it on the tube home. It only takes me 10 minutes, you know, as part of my, you know, my routine. But once you get those in, and then you get that learning and the trigger and the satisfaction from it, it's so damn important. And that, it, then it doesn't feel like a chore as well, right? Because you don't have to think about it. It just becomes that thing you do on a Monday and on a Friday, rather than, oh my God, I've got to go and, you know, to think about this goal or write this down, etc.
Yeah, I like that. I think I might start doing that, you know. I might actually start writing down goals.
But it's a personal thing, right? You don't like that stuff for me. Like, no, like I said it to my boss a few times as part of our kind of one-to-ones when he wanted a more deeper understanding of my internal narrative. And I was like, oh, actually, I've already written that down. You can have it, but you don't have to share it. And you can still kind of utilize it. You can still edit it. It's just, you know, it's just in my kind of, in the notes, in the thing. And then sometimes it's quite nice to, when you do get those sort of, you have a really good week and something happens, or you have a learning which is a bit unexpected, you also capture it. And then sometimes I'll just read back, you know, a few weeks, and, oh my God, I forgot that we went through that. I mean, you know, we tried this and this was the outcome, which was a bit unexpected. So that record of, you know, kind of what worked and what didn't in a, you know, a little bit of a way, because you're right, so much information is coming at you from a daily basis. You're reading so much, you know, and there's so many different meetings, to have those personal little reflections as a kind of record, or almost breadcrumbs of where you got to your current thinking is, you know, is important. And I mean, the other thing I do, I give a lecture once a year to my old university, which is really neat. And that sort of forces me, which is kind of managing technical teams at scale. And I've had to kind of, through that, in a similar way, build a deck, which is essentially why I think the way I do. So going into kind of agile practices, going into kind of, you know, the way I think about product management, the way I think about engineering management, and pulling all of that together into a sort of, you know, hour-long narrative has forces me to reflect and go backwards and think, why do I think, you know, in that way, you know? And I was like, oh, actually, I think in that way because I had this experience and, you know, I've taken that kind of from the agile kind of manifesto. And a similar thing with, I'm a mentor to a, you know, a CTO of a startup at the moment. And he just asked me these most amazing questions, like stuff I haven't asked myself for like 7 years, you know, like, how do you, you know, how much do you read? Or, you know, what kind of books do you read to get into this? Or how do you think about these different things? And again, it forces me to go back and really reconnect with why I am where I am right now. And then I write, and, you know, we sit down, either have a conversation and write to him. But externalizing that, you get more confident. Because I know why I think like this. It's because I've had these experiences. So those things as well have been really important, you know, to kind of be prompted. And you've got to go backwards sometimes and think about how far you've come and why you are where you are, and not just always focus on, you know, where you want to get to and, you know, taking that next step.
Yeah, it's a balance, isn't it? You know, it's healthy. Yeah. It's healthy both ways, really. You know, I think
exactly. It's.
I'm very much that way inclined. Like, I struggle, and you know, my partner, she's like, hey, I think she drives her insane. You know, that like I struggle to enjoy things and be in the moment because I'm very much like always thinking about what's next. So it's something that for me personally, like I'm working on is to try and like, you know, when I achieve things, actually take a seat back and, you know, just enjoy it for a little bit. But it's like, it's a pro and con because I feel like if I hadn't had, you know, that motivation to constantly be pushing, then I wouldn't have achieved the things that I have achieved. But at the same time, like you can't just continue to go on like that forever because it's just, it's probably a very unhealthy state. But secondly, like say you get into a position, you put yourself in a corner sometimes where you forget, you know, like you said, exactly what you've done to get there in the first place. And, you know, when you were saying about obviously having a mentor in a CTO of a startup now, you've been part of the kind of, you know, quote unquote, the hyper growth startups. And now you're kind of in a, you know, more stable, I suppose, PE backed, I think. Company. Actually, similar to myself, that you know, I've worked in that kind of in a hyper growth environment, startup, now in a slightly bigger organization. You know, I've really cherished my background with that regard because I think it's really given me some good habits, but also probably some bad ones as well. But you know, do you feel kind of similarly about that? You know, are you really? Do you cherish that kind of experience? And are you glad that you kind of did it that way around instead of what I seem to find at the moment is it seems to be quite cool for people to get involved in startups and they're going from like, you know, consulting or whatever, you know, the kind of MBA types into a startup because it's kind of cool. To me, it doesn't make sense to do it that way around, but, you know, that's my opinion, I suppose.
Yes, I mean, I've been pretty fortunate to work at kind of multiple stages of different startups and for some sort of pretty large, you know, corporations. I mean, my first kind of heavy technical job was at Enron, of all places, which was a pretty amazing place to work.
Wow.
But yeah, the hyper growth, my last role kind of at a startup, I mean, to give you some context, the first day I joined, I was 10 years older than anyone else in the office. And the next week we doubled the size of the company from 16 to 32 people. So, you know, that level of growth and, you know, let's be honest, chaos at times was, you know, was pretty breathtaking. And having a bunch of, you know, kind of slightly skewed younger people all around a mission meant if you wanted to change something, you could go and have a, you know, management meet and then come out and sort of 2 hours later, you'd reconfigured and everything was going, you know, in a new direction. And I think people's desire and capacity for change was much higher because they understood that was, you know, the kind of environment they were in. As I've moved across, and also I guess the other key point is that, you know, you're very sort of mission driven, right? You're aiming for the moon the whole time. It's always just an unbelievable drive forward. One, because you don't know how long your funding's going to last, and you've got to do amazing things within this kind of ticking clock kind of, you know, environment. And I guess then, one, it was a much smaller team that I was working at then. There's about six, seven people that I was kind of accountable for. One of the reasons I moved across to the private equity side was I've now got a team of 75. Which has been, you know, quite a step up. The key challenges I probably faced are, which was realistic, it was that goal setting. When I first moved here, because everything's about growth, but a kind of sustainable sort of, you know, somewhere between single and double digit growth. Everything was very, what I felt when I came was very backwards looking. So you're like, where were we last year? What were we doing last year? Mm. And how have we done that little bit of an incremental change in order to kind of do a little bit better this year? And it felt like we were always looking at last year's numbers and kind of coming forward to this year's number, rather than when I was in the startup, we didn't really care about last year's number. We wanted to double, triple them, and we were all focused on what the big next kind of thing we were going to do to have a, like, not a marginal impact, but a kind of significant impact on that. And it, you know, it was quite a challenge to kind of get my head around how that felt and how that motivated me. I'm much more motivated by aiming for the moon and trying to double, triple things than I am, hey, let's go and eke out that 5%, which, you know, is something that I've got much used to. And I think we've also got better at sort of planting that flag over the last sort of 12 months or so. The other thing that I probably brought across and was a bit of a challenge was I hadn't quite understood my capacity for change is pretty high, right? Like I'm because I've worked in those environments, I understand, right, we're going to go do something, let's just go and do it and get on with it. As you move into organizations where people have been there longer, who have different levels of experience, other people's, you know, capacities for change and how that impacts them is different. And I've also started managing different cultures. So I've got a team of about 25 people in France. And, you know, culture's capacity for change kind of is very impactful. So one of the things I should have been a bit more mindful of and something I've been reflecting on personally is how much I've probably changed everything in the first 12 months that I came here, you know, sort of multiple times. And my assumption was, hey, I can deal with this. This is fine. But the knock-on impact of, you know, people within the teams within, you know, kind of my new larger environment who weren't quite used to that was much higher than I'd anticipated.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's crazy and, you know, the differences in how adaptable I suppose you have to be. But I, for me, I wouldn't kind of want it any other way. I don't know about you, but I couldn't imagine, and not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with this, but, you know, being in a kind of similar environment for, you know, 20 plus years. Like, I just couldn't imagine it. I think you're not that way inclined either. So it's the challenge that you thrive off, and it's the kind of the sense of achievement. And I think, you know, you only get that really from, like, say, being a part of a lot of different projects and kind of pushing yourself and challenging yourself. And I think we're probably lucky in a way that, you know, the climate that we're in now, it's very much acceptable, you know, to be involved in several companies in, you know, a space of 5-6 years. You know, that's not a big deal anymore. And, you know, it's great for us and for candidates alike because, you know, it gives us that freedom, you know, to really constantly challenge ourselves. But now you're kind of on the other end and you have to kind of look at retention and retaining talent and getting the best talent. It's actually like, it's rather challenging, isn't it? And probably something that I'm sure you spend some element of time thinking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge part, you know, not just for, you know, kind of my direct reports, but, you know, their direct reports. I mean, one of the reframes that, you know, I've taken recently into that is like, look, my goal is, I reframe, my goal is to make the people who work for me successful, right? Number one. And what I've been saying to everyone is like, you know what, like, we never know how long our journey is going to be together, but let's just make sure the part of our journey that is together, that we're lined up as best as we can, you know, with our personal goals, you know, with our slightly wider kind of company goals, and let's just do everything else. Let's just line that up in the best way we can for it is. And you're not really planning for that 3, 4, 5 years, but hey, let's just make sure we enjoy what we're doing right now. Let's really make sure that you're getting what you want out of this, that I'm getting what I want out of that, and that, you know, kind of that satisfaction and desire and that it breeds a really different kind of conversation, I think, which is good. One that's a bit more open and honest around that, and also I think because people are then understanding of, oh hey, like, actually this, you know, I am really concerned about, you know, what you're doing, it's been a good part, and the rest of it is, you know, you've got to create an environment that, you know, is a great place to kind of come to work. You've got to create an environment that's not just great, but one that's inspiring from a technical point of view, inspiring from a business point of view. And it's a constant challenge. You've obviously got to play along with the market, which is, you know, very much a rising tide as well, which can be quite a challenge. And, you know, trying to find all different kind of levels of that, you know, starting with still finding some kind of more junior people and bringing them on, and as well as kind of taking the people at the top and, you know, finding new people to come in. So yeah, retention is a constant challenge. But I think if you can have open and honest conversations about it and you can line up desires from all sides, then at least you're going to have fun while you're doing it. At least everyone's going to get something out of that. And, you know, you've got the best chance of, you know, delivering the value that you can while everyone's around.
Yeah. Man, I don't want to keep you too much longer, Dave. I know we're about 30 minutes or so now, believe it or not, actually. But, you know, yeah, moving forward, it's a fascinating job and a very exciting one, I suppose, what you're part of now. You know, it really encompasses, you know, really the all three elements, I suppose, that we discuss on the show, I suppose, with, you know, the tech side of things, you know, the leadership and of course the people side of it as well. If you were to kind of, I know it's very three very broad things, but if you were to say what is the most, you know, engaging and motivating part of the role these days, you know, what would you say is the thing that, you know, keeps you, as passionate and motivated at this point in your career, maybe in comparison to, you know, earlier stage?
It still comes back to the problems, right? Like just solving bigger and wider and more complex problems. And those problems now weave in between all three parts that you've mentioned, right? Because with the best engineering vision in the world and, you know, going super deep on how you do the right coding and standards and getting pipelines set up, that's great. But if you haven't got the right people in the team, then you're still going to struggle doing that. And if you haven't got the right process around them in order to kind of enable them going forward. So for me, it's kind of focusing on solving those bigger, wider problems. I still think there's an engineering mindset of doing the same thing over and over again and making it better, which is a kind of key satisfaction. And overall, is I really have tried to over-index on the people side of things and making the people around me and underneath me more successful to, you know, to kind of get that satisfaction out across the board. Because, you know, it is. It was my birthday last week, and I had a guy who came out who I employed while I was still at uni at my first startup, who's just, you know, got a contracting job, who's, you know, having worked at, you know, two or three other places and is absolutely flying, about to buy a flat and be in a great place. And it was, you know, just such an amazing thing to sit down and think, you know, he'd done all the hard work, but that guidance and help that I'd helped, you know, with him in those early days, and to see him now sitting there at the end of the table doing that was a unbelievably kind of satisfying feeling.
Yeah. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Enjoyed the whole chat, to be fair, mate. I wish we could probably go on a bit longer, but, you know, it's time to probably get some actual work done, I suppose.
There's a few things that I've got to sort out as well.
Yeah. So, mate, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much again for getting things started so early in the morning.
Hey, my pleasure, mate. And have a lovely day. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.